The Space Case Sarah Show with space nerds Kovi and Benjamin. Who is Space Case Sarah?
Spunky, edgy, smart, funny, and a rebel feminist.
Now, witness it yourself on iRock Space Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Space Case Sarah Show with the space nerds, Kovi and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio. I cannot lie. This is the episode. This is a good, a very good element. I think it's everyone's favorite element. And this is the carbon episode.
Carbon.
Carbon. And if you listen to this station often, you will hear a band occasionally plays on this station called Carbon-Based Lifeforms. It's one of my favorite, like, spacey kind of different, like, spacey feel bands, band kind of people. Anyway, and that's one of the cool things about being in an independent station like this is that we can suggest music to the radio station, and if they like it, they'll buy the license to it and put it on. So if you have like a space suggestion of music that is like spacey themed, or maybe it has space lyrics in it, drop us a line and we'll see if we can get it on air for you. But today is Carbon.
Carbon.
And carbon is, you know, famously everything, the building blocks of life. So I'm going to let my space nerds take over here, because you guys are the facts and I want you to drop all the carbon nerddom on me, because I am actually, this is like the pumpkin spice of elements. Like, of course everybody likes, like, it's so basic, right? Of course. Like, of course you like carbon, but I kind of I really do like carbon. Can we talk about carbon?
I would like to have it on the record that I do not like pumpkin spice.
Well, I mean, but so.
I don't think I've had pumpkin spice.
You know, carbon's kind of a thing. Okay, carbon's probably more inescapable than pumpkin spice. So you're just going to have to deal with it.
Yes. Yeah. Carbon and the eventual heat death of the universe are two things that are inescapable.
Wow.
All right. Well, let's go. I mean, carbon is from death too, right?
Carbon. All right, let's start this episode over.
Okay. Carbon, let's do it.
The great thing about carbon, and the reason why it's so prevalent all across the universe, or at least as far as we can tell, all across different forms of life on Earth, is that it has this really unique ability to bond with four other atoms. So, you know, depending on where atoms sit in the periodic table from left to right, that kind of tells you how many what's called valence electrons there are. It's basically, you know, atoms are meant to be neutral, and then depending on where they are, they'll have a couple of electrons along the outside that aren't part of this neutrality, you know, between the positive stuff in the middle and the other electrons. And so the more valence electrons you have, the more you can bond with things, right? And so carbon can...
models are like flashing across my head right now. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, I'm just picturing the models from like Intro to Chemistry for Physicists, which is they've dumbed down for the physicists. So carbon's really unique in that way, that it can bond with four different things with these valence electrons. And even though the other elements in that column, like silicon, can also do it, it can't do it as well. So like, yeah, there could definitely be other forms of life out there in the universe that are, you know, maybe silicon based or based on other atoms, but carbon is the most stable. It's what we know. And it seems to be everywhere, from, you know, our DNA to the energy that our body uses to run, to, you know, all the building blocks of life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's yeah.
And there's a big hunk of carbon on my wife's finger too.
This is kind of a weird, I don't know, commentary, but I think about, you know, carbon when we burn things, and the remnants left over is that carbon. And it you know, obviously early humans didn't know that that was carbon, but there's something so cool about that transfer of energy. And so when I go camping, I know this sounds so lame, but bear with me. I always throw a little bit of food into the fire as like my homage to like humans knowing how to burn, how to capture the fire of energy. And it allowed us to build our big brains and evolve into what we are today. And so it all kind of ties into that carbon and fire and the wood. And I don't know, really nerdy. Anyway, moving on.
Cool.
So Benjamin, carbon. Yeah, yes, it's like my, I don't know. I'm not a spiritual person. If you know me, and I'm not into any of that kind of stuff, but for some reason that's like my homage to just like thank you to our evolutionary past for harnessing the power of fire to, you know, essentially build our brains to be able to learn how to build rockets to fire up and send people to the moon. You know, there's that connecting thread in that fire and energy. Benjamin, you also are a big fan of carbon.
I am carbon.
You are carbon. You're made out of carbon. And what's that Carl Sagan quote
right there,
that where, you know, carbon in your apple pie or something like that, right?
Oh, he had that quote, like, if you want to build an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe, which is a great
in
quote.
Our bones and our DNA, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it comes from exploding stars.
Everything comes from exploding stars.
It did. So what do you know about carbon? Drop some knowledge. What do you want
to
talk about?
Drop some knowledge. I was going to mention what Kavi said about the silicon being able to have the same four bonds that carbon can. And in theory, it's possible that there are silicon-based life forms out there. But there's none that we can find here as an example. But astrobiologists have not, you know, written it out of the equation altogether. They just know that it's a possibility. As Carl Sagan himself said, we're carbon chauvinists. We look for what we know because that's what we are, and it makes sense. But you know, as far as thinking, you know, life can only exist made of certain elements living in certain conditions, just on our own planet, we've proven that wrong several times. Like in the most harshest places, next to volcanic vents, deep down in the blackness of the bottom of the ocean, there's creatures that are living great, eating sulfur. And there are other creatures living in the coldest of cold, darkest of dark depths of horrible caves that are just, they're fine. That's their universe. But one thing they all have in common, at least so we've seen so far, is carbon-based. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they can live anywhere also gives a chance that they could possibly somewhere be made out of something else, but it's so far nothing that we've seen.
Astrobiology 101, right? It makes me so freaking excited, which is what we're kind of, we knew this was going to be a carbon episode, so we were like, we need to talk about life and the phenomena of life in the universe, which is what astrobiology is. Because we kind of joked a lot and we said this is going to be the alien episode, but astrobiology is actually the study of the phenomena of life here to better understand how it might be happening in the universe. And so to your point about, you know, hydrothermal vents and there's life down there eating chemicals to stay alive, but they still have that common thread of carbon, which is very, very interesting because, you know, we knew that plants use photosynthesis. We eat plants to get our energy, but they're eating off the sulfur, which is chemosynthesis, is just mind-blowing, but they still have carbon. And so so we're going to do this episode on carbon, but kind of bouncing off of that, it's going to be an episode about life and the messages we've sent out into space to try to contact life. We're also doing this episode in honor of the passing of Frank Drake, who is a legendary astrobiologist. He really made, along with Carl Sagan, that field turn into sort of a legitimate study and not just a hokey kind of, UFOs, tinfoil. And I truly believe in my heart of hearts that we will all live to a day where, like, there's, you know, biology, but then there's microbiology. I believe that there will be classes in universities that are focused on astrobiology someday. And I really believe that that will happen in our lifetime, because we will, whether it's going to Venus and finding that there are microorganisms in the cloud decks, or that Perseverance does have something interesting in her core samples, I think that there will be something that will validate the field of astrobiology to the point that it will be a course within university study. So that is sort of my big dream, hope, wish. And I'm stealing it off of Frank Drake and Carl Sagan and the people who paved that path for what I feel like. I feel like I'm kind of like part of generation three. Like they were like generation one. And then you had like kind of another wave that when that Mars meteorite, whatever that, I can never remember the name of the, all the letters and numbers, HB, blah, 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 blah.
Big space rock.
You know what I'm talking? Yeah. The rock that maybe had a fossil in it. I think that that was like generation two that really made everyone go, holy crap. And now like we're part of this generation three where we have missions that are actually going with that intent. You know, Viking obviously did that as well, but it was so inconclusive. I think it discouraged a lot of people. So anyway, before we talk aliens, and I want to tell our listeners really quick, we were discussing the foundation of this episode in our private chat. And Benjamin earlier goes, I don't remember what we're talking about. I know it's carbon, but what are we talking about? And I sent him a gif of a person dressed up in an alien suit and like walking into a diner really late at night. And he's like, oh, the diner that aliens go to at 4 a.m. in the morning. Got it. So I was like, yeah, let's pivot. We're going to do that today. That's what we're doing. So we're going to talk about diners and which aliens, like which ones in particular. That makes me think of there. I don't know if it's there anymore, but my parents live out in Arizona and they live near Saratoga. Nope, that is New York where I used to live. Sedona. Sorry, both with S's. They live near Sedona. And so Sedona is like known to have vortexes. So like the ley lines of the earth cross in spots in Sedona and the aliens are attracted to this spot. So there used to be, I know this is gone for sure, but there used to be an alien store there. And there was a rundown ice cream truck that they converted into an alien hunting truck. And if you paid for the special goggles, you were guaranteed to see an alien, a UFO that night. Okay. So there was that. And then there was a diner that was all alien themed. And you walk in and the lights were really red. So then when you would leave outside, it would be like so green. And then they had like on the diner counter inlaid was like newspaper articles of all these like UFO Area 51 kind of things. So if there was a diner that would win, that would be the one.
For sure. This diner, you say, got sucked into the vortex.
I don't know if it's still there, but I know that the UFO store did go out of business. Apparently they just could not sell enough alien tours. I don't know what happened. It seems like a shame. Yeah.
actually fun fact, speaking of vortices, vortexes, I discovered this week, and this connects to what we're talking about before with Carl Sagan, that in general relativity, we use these equations to describe space. So space is kind of like wibbly wobbly and curved. And so you can, you know, model that with different equations that will describe how curved the space is in different ways. So the equation that was, I think it's called the Morris-Thorne equation for describing a wormhole geometry was written at the request of Carl Sagan for his book Contact. Yes.
Really?
Because... yeah, it blew my mind when I found out. Supposedly, Carl Sagan was writing Contact, and he was looking for a more realistic way for his characters to travel through interstellar space. And the wormhole was the idea that they came up with. And so two physicists sat down. I can't remember Morris's first name, but Thorne is Kip Thorne, the same guy who wrote the code for the... interstellar black hole in the movie Interstellar. They came up with this equation to describe how a wormhole could form, how this kind of general relativistic vortex, if you will, could form and contort space in very interesting ways.
That is
so
super cool. I love that kind of stuff. That is awesome. That was like an awesome fun fact. We actually need to stop really quick and take our first break, our one and only break, as we're aware of. So if you are listening and you're like, man, there's a long chunk of music, don't worry. Get through the music and we will be right back for a big long chunk of conversation after this. But again, this is the carbon episode. We're going to talk about carbon-based life forms and are there other of those out there? I am Space Case Sarah 22 on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, blah, 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 blah. And these guys are Fun Fact Science with Kavi, also on all the platforms. Science, actually science, depending on which platform you're on. For Benjamin, my space nerds, you are listening to the Space Case Sarah show with Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio.